Well, you always got money on the money.
The trouble with me is I don't know how to drink. But yeah.
We got it.
There's a famous story of a guy who says, my son-in-law is terrible. Why? Doesn't have a drink, he doesn't have a gamble. He said, what's the problem? Because he smokes and he drinks again.
He's a great person.
But especially since Professor Malam is here, I'm gonna have to keep to my topic, which has to do a little bit with philosophy. A little bit. This year, I was drawn to the Ramoa's book on Megillah's essay called Mechir Yayin, which tries to present the Megillah in a philosophical manner. But he has things in there that are surprising, Stamazite. And one of the things he says at the very end is that the reason you're supposed to get very drunk on Purim, extremely drunk, is because since, this is going to sound funny, but this is the Ramah. Since drinking is a mitzvah to yom, and drinking inevitably leads to some kind of a sin or damages, you better make sure you're very drunk so that you will not be able to be held accountable for sinning or damaging. This, he says, is al derech hapshat.
Okay.
I promise you, I that's why I claimed my
head. I'll
tell you again. He says, at the end of the thing, he says, I think I gave you the
Ramajish.
What's that?
My respect for the Ramajish.
Shut up or down.
I'm in all the time.
Wait a second.
No, we're talking about you. He's asleep. He's blue.
So you're about to learn an exception to what you just said. There's a math and science guy. There's such a concept called carnival, in which there's a different set of rules. The European law knowledgeable people know what I'm talking about. This says the Ramah is the Pshat HaPashit in Mechai Vinish Lepsur Mipuya Adliya Minor Ham Lebarach Mordechai. Could this be, by the way, if you want to be real, the word shover is to break, and I just start this up. To break things is the same gematria as Arham and Baruch Mordechai, which is 502. The, whatever. So what the Ramah is saying is that drunkenness excuses sin in the legal sense. Now, sin involves two elements, the deed and the intention. If you have no intention to do the sin, you're not punished. Although ordinarily, in Jewish law as well as in regular law, you'd be financially obligated to pay for the damages you caused, even accidentally, but not on poor. It's such a din like that in the Shulchan Aruch. In Tafrei Sadi had to end the Shulchan Aruch, look at the Ramah. That if you will see.
I'm wondering about drunk driving.
Yeah, that's it could be. I mean, I don't want to get into that and be quoted. This is why I don't like the Richard. This is why I don't like the Richard Nixon part. The rules of Bashiach all that doesn't apply to the situation. Hear me out. Wait a second. Just hear me out. Now, what I just mentioned before, a sin involves two elements: the deed and the intention. If you have no intention of committing the sin, you're not punished. At least. Not on the cases like Purim, Isaiah, Dr. Ramah, and Tafri Shad Eitzim and Vase. Now, what about an onus? Which is not, now we have a philosopher here. What's the difference between Shogig and Onik? Here you have the intention to commit the act, but not the free and independent desire to do so. Right? You have Rasa, in Yeshiva language, you have Rasa and you don't have Bechira. I'll put it under your head. You have Rasa and you don't have Bechira. So, here you have the intention. This is a subtle point. You do intend and want to do the act, but only because of duress. In other words, I ask you, what's the difference between shogig and onus? Which is an interesting question. What does it mean, shogig and onus? Let me ask you another question. If you do a sin, the shogig, the onus, we see onus rachmana patre. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs. Where is it in the Torah? Torah says, well, anara lo sasa adabar ein lanara chet mavis. Then if the girl's raped, it's not her fault. It's a din d'oraisa. However, the case of the Torah is a passive case, obviously, right? She was a victim of circumstances without getting into the technicalities of karka olam and all that. What about where she or anybody else commits an act, but an active act, not a passive act, out of duress? The Rambam is interesting. In Hilchos Chagol Mazik says that if a Jew was forced by going to be a moser, and reveal to the God the location of the money of another Jew. The Jew, right? The Meister is putter. Hey, come in, sit down. The Meister is putter because it's a grumble. And I told the God where your money is. However, if the Jew physically takes the property of the guy and hands it over to them, which is not a grama, then the meister is chayev, even though he did it under duress. Okay? So the fact he was under duress does not excuse the act. A sin was committed. It's a financial sin. He has to make restitution. Azegdek, the Rambam, but guess what? The Rambam says no. Interesting. The Rambam disagrees. Since it was under duress, the meister is not chayev. So, here was an active sin, but it was under duress. Turns out the machlok is the Rambam and the Rambam. A machlok is Rishonim. So the Ramah, who says that if you are excused if you're drunk and damaged or sin, goes like the Rambam, not like the Rambam, which is just interesting because he usually goes like the Rambam. Now you can counter-argue that Purim, which is what we call Carnival Day, is a special case if you have Lamdronim over here. You can't learn that over there because the Patur Tashlumin is not because you have the right to damage, but because everybody knows if I was stupid enough to invite you to my house and you're drunk, I can expect. So,
assumption of risk.
The Vitor, right? Presume Mechila, or maybe Hefker, based in Hefker. This is the language they talk. But if you think about it, these two Svaras are based on the fact that the damage on Purim was done not intentionally, but Ba'inus, because of the carnival atmosphere, or as they used to call in the old Svaram, Machmas HaSimcha. Causing unintended damages to occur. Now you can have a schmuck, and he'll say this: I don't like you. I'm going to take advantage of the fact it's Purim. I go smash you in. Yeah? So if someone damages intentionally in Purim, cynically taking advantage of the window opportunity provided by the fact that a carnival is taking place, the damage is damages indeed a sinner, and he has to pay damages. It's a very interesting Shumas Adeshan by a guy who stumped the other guy on purpose in Hoshinus. I hated you, so I was just, you know, like that. Or like the poem is, you know, like that.
Where's Albert Schleiser when you need him?
Oh, shut up. This is all going.
Sorry. Sorry, Al.
Hi, Jonathan. I didn't notice you before. Okay. How many attorneys do we have at the table here? Okay. I won't mention this guy's name. I won't get him in trouble. We're not being videos.
Got 18 minutes left to burn.
Thank you. You know, you just dated yourself.
Yeah, he's not.
Nobody knows that 18 minutes. No, this crowd knows. This crowd knows.
Smurmaster.
Yeah, right?
That's what he was doing.
Yep. Nixon and the Smurmaster.
Smurmaster.
He said, listen, it was good enough for you to sound like the Shalom Nation. Anyway, hold on. Wait a second. There's a case in the Truman's Audition, and a guy stopped the other guy, and he knew it, and the Truman's Audition is like this. You've got to get up in shul. You have a public ceremony. You have to chatos Hashem, the chatos ilcho. They got to pay through the nose. I mean, they really went after that because that's disgusting. Using the Hoshinus as an opportunity, you know, that's double disgusting. Now, to qualify as an earnest in Purim, you need A, not intentionally taking advantage of the window opportunity, and B, that there was a genuine heady atmosphere where people act silly, machmas simcha. This is not a kibbutz. This is in the Mishnah, okay, in Sukkah, but the commentary Rashi. The Mishnah says, in the old days, after Hoshinus, meaning Hoshinah Rabbi, after they come to Shinus, right, the adults would grab and eat the etrogim from the kids around them. That was the practice. Miyara tinokas, shamtinas ulavei mochum etrogim. That is, I would take the by force, the etrogim of, say, Jonathan Marvin's kid, let's say he was a minor, and eat it. Okay? Now, may I do this? Isn't it stealing? Rashi says, "Ein b'davar lo mishum gezel, v'lo mishum darkei sholem." It's not called stealing. Shekein nagu machmas asimcha. So in ancient Israel, back in the time of Beis Hamikdash, one of the carnival days was the Shana Rabbah. This is interesting. In the Beis Hamikdash here, I know it sounds funny, but we don't know what it was like living in those days. Because he clobbed Shinus doesn't give you the right to take the. But that's what okay, he's fine with it. Wait, there's another attorney.
You got crap there? Maybe there's.
Now, wait a minute. Tosfos. Wait a second. This Mishnah, Tosfos extends specifically the wedding shtick. V'yesh loma mikan, losam bacharim. Sharochim Besusim, Likras Chosan in the Middle Ages, Vinilchamim Zem Zer, so from Chosan a shtick, you have like a joust, right? The Korin Begodesh of Havero is a Jewish joust. Korin Begodesh of Havero, right? Or Makalkalo Suso, right? So Shane Paturin. Right, right, right. That's right. There's
I'll dig up a Mashiach.
That's right. There's a horseman. He knows the horse. So, say Vator, say Kach Nogu Machmas Asimcha. What's Tosa saying? What's Tosa saying? If you have a Purim like atmosphere or a wedding or something like that, it's understood. If you don't go to the wedding and expect that nothing's going to happen, right? I mean, in other words, you know what it's a little bit like? Like Hanukkah. Remember, what is it Gemara saying, Hanukkah?
Hanukkah.
Yeah, right there. If you hold, remember, in the marketplace, don't say that, what do you call it, you know, you didn't know that the your camel was walking by, it's going to knock into a Ner Hanukkah. That's what people do.
Which is the source? Is there a Hanukkah the source of this?
No, I think the Mishnah is, right?
That's what I'm saying. The Mishnah is talking about Ner Hanukkah.
No, but the Mishnah I read is it's talking about Shana Rabba, I said it earlier. Right? The Mishnah doesn't talk about Ner Hanukkah in... That's not a Mishnah, it's a Gemara, right? It's in the Mishnah in Bava Kamma.
Okay. In Bava Kamma.
Yeah, then you're right. Clearly, the debate stream is addition, and for the Ramah who say the mitzvah of getting drunk, the Ramah I just told you before, the Ramah is not a drinker. It said that there will be no intentional taking advantage of it, but there will, yes, a heady and carnival atmosphere. I hope you understand. Now, ordinarily, if it was a non-carnival, it would be a different discussion. Are you allowed to deliberately put yourself in a place of onus, so that you'll be excused from committing a violation of the law? Is that ethical? Okay? This doesn't sound fair or ethical. But that, my friends, is a famous machlokes between the Baal HaMor and the Ramban in the run on Shabbos. I remember this from 40 years ago because I bought Chevelle's book on the Gilyoni Hashas, and it's really cool. From Rabbi Akiva Eiger, he explicates all the Rabbi Akiva Eiger's and things. And for some reason, that stuck in my mind. It's the first one in Beisa. The mind works in a funny way. So wait a second. Ahu mila d'shtabacham rindi b'Shabbos. There was a circumcision, and they had hot water ready for what you need right afterwards, take care of the baby, and the little nevus, and the water spilled the Shabbos morning before the bris took place. Are you allowed to go ahead with the bris? It's a machlokes, the Melchemes Hashem, and the Baal HaMor. It's a famous thing, right? If you circumcise the baby, you need to boil water on Shabbos. So, don't do the bris today. Wait till tomorrow. You want to see Michal Shabbos. Or do you say, go ahead with the bris, and then you'll be in a case of oinus, and then you'll be allowed to do it for Pekoch Nevis. Are you allowed to do it or not? So the Ramban says, go ahead and do the bris, even though you'll have to do it. Meaning you're allowed to put yourself in a mukum of oinus.
Sakana.
That's right. That's what you're saying. You're allowed to put yourself in a mukum of sakana, and then that will cause you to have to go and do Pekoch Nevis, right? And the Baal HaMor famously says, call Shana Yodin. You can't do it. If you know it's going to lead to it, delay the bris till tomorrow. It's interesting. Why am I mentioning all this piquant Ramah? It's not a cute part. In my opinion, my friends, it goes to the heart of the Purim story. What were the two big sins in the time of Purim?
Eating it up.
They both involved. No, they were in the two. Wait a second. The two big sins. No. In the end of the discussion, it was not the party. So wait, hear me out. Well, wait a second. Yeah. What are the two big sins in the Purim story? Both are in the context of Oinus. Number one, they bowed down to the idol in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and that was duress. No question about it. And number two, Esther slept with the king, and that was out of duress. No question about that. One was the case of Odezara, the other case of Gila Rice. These are the two big stories that underline the Megillah Esther, according to the Gemara anyway. Indeed, it was precisely because it was the case of Linus, that's why God did not kill him. That's what they say. And the Gemara says, Shol Talmidei Shimon ben Yochai, that they mas Hayav in Yisrael, Chloya Bezman Haman, and he said, because Mishtach Lassam, in King Yishmas upon a bedover, then why didn't God kill him? Which means that by the time Haman was the prime minister, all the ducks were in a row. Mordechai saved the king, Esther was the queen, Vashti was out of the way. You know, all the things are ready for the downfall. That's how you see it. So God just scared them. And each day, I guess, up to come a Mishrek. You understand? He scared them like he saw a child. I've experienced this, I'm sure. Yeah. He's smaller. He was lost in the science center once when he was a little kid in Liberty in New Jersey. Going crazy, you know? Up to come and miss rep.
Did you find him?
What's that? Science and math.
What about the Caleb and Caleb Shinem?
What about it? That wasn't a sin that the Jews did.
Well, 1 second. Yeah, had a note from it.
So the Gemara says that in Cain, only the Jews in Shushan should have been punished, and nobody else should have been punished. In Cain, B'Shushan Yehargu, B'Achem Lo Yehargu. And you know it was all 127
pounds.
The Gemara says, at the end, he says, Imratem. In other words, it's not for them. Now, the truth is, Rabbi Gruner is a smart guy, and if you really were going to go into it, the Gilyoni Hashas brings down Rabbi Akiva Eger. He says, if you look in the Medrash Rabbah on Shirashirim, they switched his mind. Later he says, Taka was the party, and then you have to understand why. And the reason Rabbi Akiva Eger, you tell me, this is to ask the question, is to see the answer. Why would Shimon ben Yochai, change his mind as to the reason for destruction of Jewish people? The answer is, one was before, and one was after. Before what and after what?
The cave.
Yeah, right? Well, right, that's what they're going to say. Before, when he had a litvish sensibility, it was because of the bow down to the idol. Because how bad is eating a meal? Once he became a makubal, a chassidish, then it was seduced.
The Gemara brings down also that they did a bakasha because they were told.
There's all kind of difference.
Yes.
Let me tell you something. It says Mitnation Nesu the Chavetz. It's one thing if you get, you know what I'm talking about exactly. It's one thing if you got to go to a Christmas party. You got to do what you got to do. There's a high art called you go to a Christmas party or a New Year party and you have the Coke the whole time for an hour and a half. And you are used to your business obligations, your social obligations, and you're nice to everybody and so on and so forth. I was once, before Professor Malami came along, now things are kosher. I had to go to my department long ago, and it was kosher like the Charles Levine. That's what it was, Charles Levine. So, in other words, whatever.
He held the coat, and they had a way to get kosher for you.
Yeah, right. And it was in Roland Park, and everybody, I think, and this was done in a very fancy, I won't say who the professor was, because he was a nice guy. He did me favors. But, you know, he was living in a sixth, and it was a big house in Roland Park at the end of a block, you know, waspy. And there you don't have to show up. So everybody sat on the floor. You understand? When you're really high class, you don't have to show up. Sat on the floor. So they gave me a thing in his work, and I was sitting with this missionary couple, I kid you not. And they had a very good conversation. I just had to match the food up, you know, look like I ate it, I did it. That's called Eino Nanim Sudato Shalachas Rerish. You understand? You go because you got to go. You do what you got to do. Nanim Sudachas Rerish is like this. The first time I grew up with you, you know, as I'll read it from the book, that's a different story. In Poland, they used to tell this story. There was a parrot, and he's having fun. He says, watch this. Majka, coming in here. Majka's a firm dude. He's like this. Eat this ham sandwich. Chas v'chalila. Now watch this. He takes out a pistol and puts it in his head. Eat this ham sandwich or I'll kill you. So he eats it. So all the nobles are laughing. And then he puts away the gun. And Moshe son goes, keep that gun right where you are. There's earnest and there's earnest.
Very good, Will.
And they shenanimous to those of Haverish means as a Gerinim from Bard. You know what I mean? So anyway, to get back to what I was trying to say, so it's Hashem only fooled them. Now, what does this phrase mean? Hey, Moshe Lefanim, Abakosha Lefanim. It means two possible translations. Outwardly, they just worship the idol outwardly. Or alternatively, Lefanim, to Nebuchadnezzar's face. So in other words, if you want to talk like Hasidim, if you want to talk Hasidish, what did they do when Nebuchadnezzar was not looking? So it's a difference if they went like this, and so he looked away, right? Versus, I myself was in Soviet Russia in 83 with my honeymoon. I was there on Rosh Hashanah. And when Karen went to Maitchel, she had to do stuff, and I had to go to the other side, Marina Russia, which they later burned down. And the main thing in Soviet Russia time, the main part of the tefillah, prayer for the government. You understand. So, and then old Chaz and this, that, and the other. And it is what it is. And then next to me happened to be Lubavitcher. You know? Just like a Russian guy. And when nobody, so there was Menchel, and there was nobody looking, you say, you're Masa, mother. No, that's called the Hemos Lefanim. You get it? So if the Jews said like this, oh, this guy, I don't Nebuchadnezzar, and then, it's one thing. That's what the Hasidim would do, you know? Or not, okay? Or not. Since they're similar because they're afraid, because Hemos Meira, Rasha Lefanim is Yira. So Hashem's like this. You want the era? I'll give you the era. I'll give you 72 hours of sheer terror. There's the story of Purim. is 72 hours of terror. From the time, or maybe a little more, the time the letters are written and sent out, until 3 days later, 4 days later, maybe when Hummel was killed, it was terror, correct? Because, you know what I mean? As a matter of fact, the Gemara says, if they weren't unsure, they would have killed the Jews right then and there. They wouldn't wait it later on. The Mali Igris has shown us, when the Shlomo is in Israel, Klum. Then when Achashir is sent out the first letter, Leos, Kalim, so Rebbe, so, in the Middle East, you tell the Israel, you know. So Rashi said, he thought he's nuts. They said, I'm not sure if we can kill the Jews right away. Let's see how it plays out. But for 4 days, as Gavan Finster and Dugan, you know, in the Holocaust, listen, the worst was the physical, but second was the mental. Okay? Second was the mental. We know that, you know, I mean, it's common sense. So anyway, Hashem's like this. Hey, Moses, funny myself running. You want to avoid bowing down to Hashem because of fear? I'll give you fear. You say, because of what? I'll give you fear. You thought you could escape this by doing an unworthy act? I'll give you plenty of fear. Now, the question goes like this. Why was this sin so big? The Gemara Sanhedrin says, Obed Avodazar me'ava me'yira. And Rashi says, Ava means Ava sa'odam, or me'yira sa'odam. Shavalo chasha b'liba elohus. So, somebody worships something because I'm afraid of somebody will kill me if I don't do it. So, Abayah Marchayv Ramah Rapater, Abayah Marchayv the whole Pacha. Abayah said, you worship it, you bow down. Ramah Rapater, Ikabli Beloa Ini, Lo Lo. It's all mental. Are you really Makabli to the God? That's one thing. If he didn't, you just bow down. So you putter, meaning it's not great, but you're allowed to do it. This means if the Jews bow down to the idol out of fear of Nebuchadnezzar, as long as they themselves do not believe in it, they're a putter, because we always pass like Rav over Abayah. So why did God punish them with fright, even? Well, they disobeyed. They didn't want to worship Sarah Nebuchadnezzar because they believed in it. They were scared. Right? I know Chanan Mishal Zai is an exception, but everybody else was scared. Okay? But wait a minute. Isn't every case of Yehar Gval Yavar like that? Isn't every case of Yehar Gval Yavar a case of worshiping, bowing down, and other religious acts without believing? I mean, if a guy puts a gun to your head and says, worship this idol or else, isn't it din that you're supposed to get killed? Even though you'd only be bowing because of the gun, isn't it exactly what Yehar Gval Yavar is? By the big three, as we call it? This the Kashrutosis and Sanhedrin. Even with Meira, shouldn't have they given up their lives? And to explain this, Tosis is a very famous and important distinction. If the idol is a real idol, a real deity worshipped by people, right? If it's worshipped by people, then the Jew has to be heard by Yahweh rather than bow down, even though he doesn't believe in it. But if the idol is not a real deity, if it's not really believed in by anyone, if the only reason people worship it is because they're scared not to, then under duress, a Jew is allowed to bow down to it as long as you don't believe in it. Yesh mafarshim, hodam b'yihar v'yavar, hainu b'stam avodazara, Tosa says. Avohacha ayir avodazara, shahakal ovdim yava me'ira. Do me to Haman. Tosa says those words. What do you think Haman was? He said, everybody should bow down to him. Oh, and you're a god. Anybody believe Haman was a god? Anybody believe Haman was a god? It's clearly a case, right? So now they're going to give it up to him. You have such megalomania. So that's all it is. So it's not like you're really, that's what Tosa says. So if you have a case like that, there's totally BS in it, you can do it. If they threaten you to kill you, right? That's how the case is. In the case of Haman, recently appointed the prime minister, nobody believes really a god. They bow down because they're scared. You can't see below a melech. You know what that? In such a case, we go like Rava, and you're allowed to bow down to Haman. And that's why the Jews were angry at Mordechai. The Medrash says that they were all angry at Mordechai. Atom apilena b'cheres l'Haman. Right? You've been killing us.
Wasn't he wearing a avodah zarah?
So wait a second. So indeed, how come Mordechai didn't bow down? Tosafot asked this question. How did Mordechai saw in the Sanhedrin? And gives two answers. Number one, shall he slum him avodah zarah l'Haman? He's wearing an idol. That's why they came up with this. Because otherwise, why would they bow down? What's wrong? That's why they came up with that. Doesn't say it anywhere. And number two, Kiddush Hashem, Mishum Kiddush Hashem. Right? The language is actually interesting. It says, it's very interesting, at least to me. It says, Mishum Yishlomo, can I remember Yishlomo Olivo? Yinam Mishum Kiddush Hashem, Papas Ulyanus? The two brothers who didn't have to. It's just, you know, this, by the way. Well, I don't want to get onto this. This is a machlokes rishonim. Are you allowed to give up your life when you're not required to? Right? The Rambam says not, as you know very well. Tosis coming out of the Crusades say you are. Okay. So these are two very different answers. Those are machlokes terutzim. You understand when you have two answers in Tosis, that means that they're arguing with each other. Not always, but usually. king. According to A, Mordechai couldn't bow down because he was wearing idols. According to B, he could, but he wouldn't. The Kiddush Hashem, I feel like we may make a Kiddush Hashem. Do I have to? So he could. No, wait a minute. I'm making a Kiddush Hashem, getting you in trouble. You hear the case? These are two different scenarios. Let's analyze them both. Haman himself was not a real deity. As Tosa said, nobody really believed him as a god. So bowing to him under duress was permitted. What about the Tzlamim, as Dr. Miller says? The pagan idols he wore in his clothing? These were real deities. So Mordechai cannot bow. But then if that's true, why were they angry at him? Why did they criticize him? They must have held that he could bow down to them. Why would they do that? Oh. I didn't hear that, but it sounds good. He said, I see two ways, or several ways of explaining this.
The you first, know the truth, you know the lift.
Okay. So he says, the first one caught my eye was the Manos HaLevi, which is my favorite book on Megillah. He asked, why does it say, Mordechai, lo yichra v'lo yistachaveh? Look at this. Lo yichra
v'lo yistachaveh, you hit the ground.
Right? Why did he say lo yichra? Why did I say that? Menos alevi. And he asked, why did he say, not only that, Mordechai, lo yichra. Mordechai wouldn't bend and wouldn't bow down. Why mention bending? Menos alevi said like this. He wouldn't bend to the idol, and he wouldn't bow to Haman. It's interesting, right? Look, when bend, it goes to one. He's specific about that. Bending, Kurim was to the idol. Mishtachav is the Haman. That's interesting. Why this distinction between Kriya to the Slomim and Mishtachavi is the Haman? Well, what exactly is the din concern? This will trigger me off. See, what's the din of Kriya, Kurim, as opposed to Mishtachav? What's the din of Kriya to an idol? Turns out to be interesting. The din is as follows. I looked it up. If the idol is typically worshipped by Mishtachavi, if that's the derech of Adoso, as opposed to Baal Peor. Oh, right. You don't bow down to that idol, right, as we know. Then Kriya alone is forbidden because Kriya b'chalal hishtachaviyah. So if I have an idol that the derech is to worship it by bowing to it, then Korim is part of that. It's in the Rambam. However, if the idol is not typically worshipped by b'chalal, then Kriya b'lip pishit yadam raglayim. Just to go like this, or like this, as opposed to hitting the ground, is a big machlokas between the Rav Shavar and the Chazanish. Right? Isn't that interesting? According to the Rav Shavar found in Hilchos Avodah Zarah 6:8, you're allowed to do it, leaving the lumpus aside. You're allowed to do it. According to the Chazanish, you're not allowed to do so, because Kriya is always Bechal Hishtachaviyah. That's the question. Is the Hishtachaviyah include Kriya automatically or not? And Hishtachaviyah is always also under all circumstances. So it's a technical thing. Accordingly, the idols in Haman's cloak may not have been the type typically worshipped by Hishtachaviyah, because after all, look at the Catholics. You have to bow down, you just kiss the hem of the clothing, for example, things like that, all kind of ways. And so the other Sanhedrin people held like the Rav Shavar and said, they're angry at Mordechai. Why are you angry at Haman for nothing when it's not necessary? Hishtachaviyah, you can do the... He's not Mishtachaviyah to Haman, he's not covered to the idol. First of all, he can do one, he can do the other, right? He's not a real deity, like Tyson says. Nobody really believes in him. And Kriya, you're allowed to do to the Slumim, because that ain't Abadasa Mashtachaviyah. Atom Afilena Becheris Haman. So it turns out Mordechai was a very controversial person, and got people very angry. Mordechai, of course, had like the Chazanish. He felt that it's forbidden to do Kriya to the Slumim. Held the tension between Mordechai and Mixas, Sanhen, Rossi, Lero, Vechov, Persian Minister Senate. And Rashi gets a nice thing. Rashi says, you know, let's twist the shot. What's the whole thing in learning it? Yeah, so Manos HaLevi said baloney. Okay?
Wait,
you said Manos HaLevi
explained...
Hold on, I'm not finished. Hear me out. He says, Mixon Ezra. And it says, which the Manos HaLevi says, means that many rabbis were still angry at Mordechai after the story was over, because it endangered everybody needlessly, even though it worked out in the end. Avaloha Yarosu Lakulam, Lefisha Samis, Klal Yisrael, Bitsar, Visakana Sumo. And that's at the end of Megillah. Okay? That's my point then. Remember, this is at the end of Megillah, even after the death of Haman and the triumph for the Jews. But said, look what you put me for you. You know, my mother in law died from a heart attack. My uncle died from a heart attack during the 4 days. Something like that, you know? And you had a shrek for no just of you. Well, okay.
You remember what I said when I spoke here the last time?
I don't.
I said that Mordechai purposely did everything that he did, that he incited Haman on purpose,
yeah,
in order to get him to make the Shuvah.
That's exactly, yeah, I know. So That's a tender billboard.
And Uriah is because it says, "Well, come below Zombie Mendo." That's not bowing down.
Yeah, when you were doing
it,
when you stand for him,
he showed him that he didn't want to.
So wait a minute, because of this, Mr. Goss, you got me in trouble. You feel like that?
Well, he, I don't know if he, maybe those people didn't hear the explanation after. They didn't hear the explanation after.
Maybe.
There's
another way of explaining. There's wait a second.
Can you bring them on to Levi to explain Levi Kabbalah Yishtachamah?
Yes. Yichra means to the idol, Yishtachamah means the homin.
Fine. And well, what was the point that you were trying to make out of that?
So that's why they were angry at him. He says, you're allowed to do Korim to
Homan. Okay,
Korim you can do to the idol, and Yishtachamah you can do the homin. Homan is not really a deity, like Tosa says, and Korim is not B'chol Yishtachamah. There's another way of explaining the story based on the petulance of Mordechai. Mamas, what Rabbi Goldberg just said. That's almost a Sandra Goldberg, but not exactly. There's no. It's like this. There's no way he's bowing down halacha or no halacha. That's what you mean, right? Forget the din. He's not bowing down.
No. He did it on purpose, and the underlying was because he wanted that there should be this second Gezeira that the Jews will be able to fight back. Now, if the...
In other words, he didn't care. Halacha no halacha.
He didn't care the whole thing.
He wasn't worried about the Rosh Hashanah and all that.
Because the reason is because the Amalekim were no more a nation. There were losses and just individuals here and there.
So you think it's a meta halachic reason?
This is the only way to gather them together. To be able to exterminate them, they come out of the woodwork.
Oh, that's a different side. That's cute. That's good, too. That's good, too. I like that. That's like the kuzari with our own and all that. Okay. But wait a second. It was a personal thing. This is found in the Yaris Vash. Now listen to this. And based on a famous Trumas HaDershan, very nice one, the historians like this Trumas HaDershan, often cited halachic literature, because Rabbi Yisrael Israelin, right there, cites the controversially lenient ruling of Rabbi Yitzchak of Oppenheim. Very famous thing that one may bow to a Catholic priest or a knight wearing a cross in the Middle Ages of the 15th century. A cross because you're just honoring the person, not worshiping the cross. Obviously, Jews have had to come onto this heter over the course of history. This ruling, interestingly, is derived from Haman. The reason of Oppenheim is in the 14th century in Ashkenaz. He said, quoting Mordechai, he said like this. He said, what do you see from Haman? He said, they'll bow down. Wait a minute.
Mr.
The Gemara says, no, he's talking about, he's not making that distinction. Of whom the Gemara in Sanhedrin said that if he had not made himself a deity, it would be okay to bow down for him even though he's wearing the crosses. That's the thing. In fact, the Maharal Oscar, who's one of my favorite books, I happen to like him, Maharal Oscar learns from here that if there is not a Tarti de Reyesa, and he's into it, a Tarti de Reyesa, meaning, Haman was a deity, and number two, he's wearing an idol. One would be permitted to bow down to a Chad L'Reyesa. Either a guy declares himself a deity, but he's not, or a non-divine person wearing an idol. That explains the Maharal Oscar, is how Avram Avinu was able to say he saw the three angels, he thought they were Arabs. He says he bowed to them. So he was asked the question in the 16th century, how could Avram bow to the Arabs? They're wearing the dust. Remember, the dust was an idol. So how could he bow down to the idol? So he's like, it's a Chad L'Reyesa. Right? Because the angels weren't gods. They're just the dust was a god. So if you had a Chad L'Reyesa, you could do it. We can live, because thank God we live today, but long ago, they had to come on to, you know what I mean? You found yourself in situations in Catholic Europe and places like that where they were looking for a tarot. That's what it is. Now, wait a second. This ruling is where the Gemara says not done so. The Trumas HaDeshen says, it's a very famous Trumas HaDeshen, Zichruni b'mei Churfi. I remember when I was a kid, Shakamer Mipreis and Hayabavino, that there was a famous grand master of the Prussian knights who came to Vienna in the 15th century. And they all had a big cross, like the Templars. And Kishaya Yehudim Boy Meslo Bashfilis came, when the Jews came to deal with these knights, Yadar Shalom Gichabdu Babur Atoeva Shekinagdo, the Catholic guy knew the Jew couldn't come in and so they would. You know, they would cover on their Hayrogil Lichpol Hasarbo Ulchasoso Kadesh Yuchalakabdo. Isn't interesting? So in other words, if the cross is covered up, there's no reason not to bow to the person.
That's almost worse.
Wait a minute. No, that's a matter of honor. Yeah. I'm just begging you because of honor, you know what I mean?
Catholic hospitals, they cover the cross.
If you're okay, but that's you don't have to bow down to the cross.
No,
that's
you don't like it.
Wait a second. Now, here we go, because I said this is anxious, you know, here we go. He says, oh, somebody got a McGill here. I can't believe a poor master wore McGill. Where's the McGill? Chapter 3.
I have it on my phone.
Yeah, give me your phone. Yeah,
I'll open it.
If you look close, it's really cute. You understand anxious. He says like this. Vayagidul Haman. No, the sequence is very, very important, actually.
Here.
You got it?
Yeah, thank you. That's it.
Excellent. So it says in verse 4 and 5. Now here we go, now comes four, so he told him day after day why don't you do it, he wouldn't listen. Right, so Mordechai went back down and then what happens? So he gets filled with anger in verse 5, but not in verse 4. Okay? His anger is first by verse. So wait a minute. Notice, Haman doesn't get angry until verse 5. Why didn't he get angry at verse 4 when he wasn't bowing down to him? Mordechai was already not bowing down to him. So the Yonah Abish said like this. In verse 4, they told Haman Mordechai was not bowing down. Haman, being knowledgeable to Torah. This is Abish's land. And second of all, he wasn't having it, you know. So for the Abish's land, Tara knows the Rambam. So he says, Mordechai, being knowledgeable in Torah, so I guess, of course he can't bow down to me. I'm wearing a yashkim with it. He has slum him on his begging. So that's understandable. You understand? And wait a minute. And Haman, being the arrogant bastard he was, he didn't hold on a non-deity. He held these attacks of the race, so, you know, right? You know. Right. Wait a minute, but I mean, you know. I'm just saying, you know, he was a time. Anyway, wait a minute. So he said like this. Haman immediately realized that it was because of the slumming that he was wearing on his coat. So that makes sense. Mordechai was just following the halacha. That's Pasuk 4. So what did Haman do? Says the understanding says, he did like the Kamer in the Trumas Adeshin. He's like, I'll cover it up. Right? In verse 5. But then Haman did like the priest; he covered it over, and now Mordechai would have no religious reason not to bow. Now comes verse 5: Vayar Haman came Mordechai korei mishtachaveh low. Oh, right. That's what it is, right? Mordechai went down low, even without the crosses. Why not? It means Mordechai was dissing him. In that case, vayimalei Haman chema. Didn't he? Okay? This thing went on for 5 years, my friends. Now I'm going to show you the other side of our Harbam Baruch Mordechai. He says, Haman became the prime minister, Achar Dvar Ma'ila. According to the Seder Olam, their policy is whenever it's mentioned post hoc, it happened right then. So Esther, it said, became the queen in the seventh year. Bishnah Shevel, Malchus. So Achar Dvar Ma'ila. So in the seventh year or so, Gidal Melch Achashir Haman. The story of Purim happens in the 12th year. So Haman went through 5 years of this junk. Right? Like a little kumble and zomi menu, and so on and so forth. Let's be fair about this, okay? Went through 5 years of this business. Over the course of 5 years, by Malay Haman Chemah, by Ibiz Beinav, Mishloach Yad, by Mordechai Labado, Kilamas Mordechai, by Yavakei Shaman Lashmin, it's called Yudim. Didn't happen overnight. You understand? He went, Nachamal. And little was, it says, and the Gemara says, first he was angry at Mordechai, then he was angry at Rabban, and then the whole Klal Yisrael. Because he constantly pushed him, okay? After 5 years, a long time, Haman's anger develops to the point of genocide. By Vakesh Haman Lashmi, this is Klal Yehudim. Okay? He tried to kill them all, even the ones who were bowing down to him. Because after all, he took off the yad, right? Bowed down to him. By Vakesh Haman Lashmi, this is Klal Yehudim, Asher Machusah Hashish, Am Mordechai. Which is a typical... The Jews thus came this close to genocide because of Mordechai. Only a miracle saved them. If this is what happened, no wonder the Mikdash Sanhedrin never forgave Mordechai. Because I repeat, Rossi Larov Echov, according to Monos Alevi, happened at the very end of the Megillah. Remember, right? After the triumph of Haman, they're still angry at him. Even after it was all over, plenty of people hated Mordechai for so recklessly endangering them and causing a 3-day or 4-day terror. In fact, it was precisely to vindicate their stand that Mordechai and Esther endeavored to get the Megillah accepted and Purim accepted as a holiday, as we read in chapter 9 at length, because we look at Megillah. He run once a Gerith, he wrote a Gerishenis, and all the rest of it, because I'm getting my narrative in there. And since they did succeed in getting Purim and the Megillah accepted, even though there was opposition, as recorded in the Gemara Megillah, Mordechai and Esther are total heroes today. But in ancient times it was not so. The Gemara Megillah says, among other things, a dissenting, resenting opinion of Mordechai. The Gemara Megillah says, Knesset Yisrael Amar Leide Iyach Yisra. Kekla Yisrael says, Ru'u Ma'asei Liyehudi Mashilim Liyemini. Ma'asei Liyehudi Delukat Lidavid Lishimi. Disyad Le Mordechai Demikne Behaman. I'm angry. Kekla Yisrael said, I'm angry at David, because he didn't kill Shimi Ben Gera. And Shimi Ben Gera eventually had Mordechai. And Mordechai got Haman angry and almost killed him. So that's an interesting, it doesn't go with the flow. You know, that represents a school of thought out there that, you know, it's not so poshut. My point is, if you lived at the time of the first Purim, the Jewish people were divided over whether or not Mordechai was a national hero or a national villain. Okay? In other words, some Jews went around saying, Baruch Mordechai, and other Jews went around saying, right? Okay, now, what's the interpretation? Listen to those words carefully. It means you can drink until you can't tell the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Ar Mordechai. Right? Wait a minute. It means you drink as long as you still have your intellectual faculties unimpaired, and you can understand both sides of what I just presented you. The ancient debate of whether Mordechai acted correctly in provoking Haman. And by the way, it goes the other way. Ar Haman Baruch Haman. You can either say Haman was a shmo and from day one he wanted to kill everybody, or you can say actually he wasn't bothering anybody. He's shepherding him for 5 years, and this and that other just built up. Like we sometimes go, you know, people are angry, or a Boshkin or something like that. So what are you making trouble for everybody else for? You know, what are you grabbing up somebody else for? So, hold it for a second. If you drink that much, adlo yada, until you can no longer stand both sides. If you drink that much, stop. Because you're no longer mentally able to understand the intricacies of the story. You're no longer able to relive the moments when the conduct of Mordechai was so divisive, even though it was vindicated by events eventually, obviously. So Mishnah is part of Purim, but we don't mean Mishnah that you're no longer able to understand what happened. What will be the point of that? So it's Adlo Adachal. I started with the Ramah and the Mechir Yayin, who says there are three interpretations of Mechai Mishnah's story before you, Adli Ar Harm and Labarach Mordechai. So I mentioned the one before. One interpretation I mentioned above, a second is philosophical and theosophical. Here, Professor Rolando will either agree with me or disagree. This is my understanding of what he writes. One should only drink when one is young and immature. That's what he says. Is the years of youth. Years of youth. Okay? He said when one is young and immature. Only when one cannot distinguish philosophically between good and bad, between Mordechai and Haman. At an immature age, one refrains from sin solely due to yiras onish. You don't really understand the difference between Ar Hamba or Mordechai. He's just afraid of being punished. Okay? Otherwise, he would indulge in sin. 99%, even of adults. You know, how many people in the Shema? That's not so many. Okay? This is the meaning of the Gematria. There are Ar Hamba and the same Gematria as Baruch Mordechai. As we all know, right? It's all 502, which is Basar. Now, you know, stick flesh. Now, when you intellectually mature and you're no longer just flesh, but soul, intellect, then don't drink. Because then wine will befuddle your judgment. Okay? At the young age, once you're, it doesn't matter. Once you're old enough to philosophize, the Rambam says, to use your mind, wine drinking would be a negative. Queen Esther reached, I will conclude by saying, now this is more in the line of the Rambam, and just to take you to a different level. Queen Esther reached this level when she got the Chatzar Beis HaMelech HaPnimis. Because according to the Rambam, famous Rambam, as some know, where the Rambam says that you want to understand how people are imagined a king in a palace. I'll read it to you in English. This is the Rambam talking more to Vuchim. He says, a simile, a king's in his palace and all the subjects are in the country or partly abroad. Some have their backs turned away from the king's palace and their faces in another direction. And some are desirous and zealous to go to the palace, seeking Levakish Veichola to get into the palace and minister before him, but have not yet even seen the face of the wall of the house. Of those that desire to go into the palace, some get there and go around in search of the entrance gate. So they get to the palace, they walk around and around, and they never get in. some have passed through the gate and walk into the antechamber, and others have succeeded entering the inner part of the palace and being in the same room with the king in the royal palace. But even those do not immediately, in entering the palace, see the king or speak to him, for after having entered the inner part of the palace, another effort is required before they can stand before the king at a distance or close by, hear his words, and speak to him. I will now explain the simile which I have made. The people abroad are those who have no religion based on speculation or tradition. The Turks, the Kushites, and others, they're irrational beings. They don't even deserve to live, he says. Okay? They have a shape of a man, but they're like monkeys. Those in the country, but who have their back towards the palace, are the Christians and the Muslims. They profess religion and thought, but they happen to hold false doctrines, which they adopted either in consequence of great mistakes made in their own speculations or received by a Masora. Because of these doctrines, every time they head toward the palace, they're actually walking away. They mean well, but since they're in the wrong direction, because on a journey, they're walking away. They're worse than the first class, and under circumstances, it may be necessary to kill them or extirpate their doctrines in order that others should not be misled. Those who desire to arrive at the palace and enter it, but have never seen it, that's your average from Jew, massive religious people. The multitude that observe divine commandments but are ignorant. Those who arrive at the palace but walk around it are those who are just into the study of halacha. They believe traditionally in the true principles of faith, and they learn the practical worship of God, but they're not trained in philosophical treatments of the principles of law, though they don't understand the reasons behind it, and do not endeavor to establish the truth of their faith by proof. Those who undertake to investigate the principle of religion, they've already gone into the king's inner chamber. There's no doubt that they can divide into different grades, but they succeed in finding a proof for everything that can be proved. They have a true knowledge of God as far as knowledge can be concerned, and they're near the truth whenever approach the truth is possible. They've reached the goal in the palace in which the king lives. If you read the Ramah's treatment of the Megillas Esther, you'll see that Esther is under great duress, reaches Malchus. In other words, she rises, you know, the emergency raises her to a greatness that she wouldn't have otherwise had. Okay? And then, first she's standing in Chatzar HaMelech HaChitzona, right? And she's afraid to go into that. And then the king says, you can come into the Chatzar Beis HaMelech HaPnimis. When she gets in the Chatzar HaMelech HaPnimis, she undoes the decree and brings about the destruction of Haman and the saving of the Jews. That's all. That's for sure. Then the rabbinate, you know that.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, that's why Mordechai Esther
is
saying the antagonist.
It says, Rasul
Ravecha.
No, there, God himself said him alone. He didn't know someone who preaches so long. That's exactly. Otherwise, you're right. That's true.
Yeah, people are ready to
no question about it. No question about it.
What about Korach as well? It says before, the Torah.
For what?
The Matzah is
Amashem,
right?
Yeah, you mean they were angry at Moshe. Moshe is different. Moshe is a different type. Moshe is a different type. Moshe is a different type. Moshe is a long-suffering person. That's a different type. But there you have it. Hey. Shoshanat Yaakov, Tahal of Ishmael, Babir of Sam Yaakov, Tayyip Mordechai, Shoshanat Yaakov, Tahal of Ishmael, Babir of Sam Yaakov, Tayyip Mordechai, Ishiwasam, Shiwasam,
Ayyisalam,
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Learning was Nazi gross.
They widely said that the eighth, the Solosol eighth was a cross.
That the what?
The eighth was a Slav that says they hung him on. Have you heard that before?
It was crucified, yeah.
Right. So, like, do you know, like, where did that come from? Like, it was the...
That's a Midrashic thing. You know,
the Midrashic?
Yeah, because Tola is often translated Sola.
We know that.
That's the reason. No, not a cross, Mom. It's just an expression.
Oh.
Yeah, sure. Al hani sin be'al apur kan be'al
apur
be'al amel kamal.
I have a different version of
your song. Al hani sin be'al apur kan
be'al. Is that Abelson? Anybody here?
Al hani sin.
What good is this? There's no one here.